It is 6:10. This is the, what month are we in? July meeting of the Westland Public Safety Advisory Board. This is, I think, going to be more of an informal meeting since we don't have a quorum. But to start this off, introductions. My name is Tom Friedland. I'm the chair of the board. To my left is...
Chris Duncan, member of the PSAB and scribe.
Stephen Myers, 12th Valley Fire and Rescue.
Judy Wickman, member of PSAB.
Lance Calvert, Public Works Director and City Engineer.
Oh, you're Lance.
And Peter Mahuna with the Westland Police Department.
Busiest man.
Okay. Since we don't have a quorum, we technically can't approve the minutes, but we can go through some of the general material that we have, just bringing everybody up to date. Jumping down at this point to old business, what do we have on disaster preparedness as of late? Specifically, I included the earthquake in Ridgecrest because of the size of the city is just about the same as West Lynn. They've had, you know, to contend with problems, and I don't know if that's made any inroads for any additional people looking into the Map Your Neighborhood program or other disaster preparedness that we have through the city.
Chris, can we run with this? Well, are we on that part now?
Yeah.
Okay.
This, because
cool.
We can't do the other stuff.
I have several things. Go for it.
Ironically, not a single call or email about that.
Okay.
It just blew me away. I thought for sure, especially since they sent out the letter to the city newsletter and said, contact Chris and Judy, here's how to reach them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But the people who've been interested are still interested. So what I wanted to say was, first of all, I spoke with, I'm having one of those senior moments, I guess. I can't remember. I was mentioning this to somebody else. But I talked to Bobby down in Irvine, California.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an emergency management manager there. And for 14 years, they've been the safest city in the U.S. with a population over $100,000, according to the FBI.
People, not dollars.
Yeah.
He said 100,000 people.
100,000. 100,000 population.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm so used to reading 100K as money. Okay. He said... they have seasonal disasters, so it's always easier to get people interested in preparing than up here.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say, I asked the point blank question, is your emergency management under the police or under public?
Works or city?
City. And he said, oh, absolutely under police. There's no question. So I thought that was interesting because ours seems to be like a ping pong ball sometimes of who's going to own what. But he said definitely, and he said of the 34 cities in Orange County, 24 have a full-time emergency manager and the rest have a part-time emergency manager. And it does fall under law, and sometimes under the fire department, but never under Parks and Rec or anything like that. So that was one thing. I had a great conversation. I said, how do you engage citizens into getting organized for this? And he said, well, good luck. It's just those that want to
mm-hmm.
host a party and say, I want to prepare with my neighbors, will do it. And they're maybe ex-Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts like I am, or the others are, you know, all the way down to put their head in the sand and think nothing's going to happen. They don't worry about utilities going out. You can't drag them in, but you can at least... I asked my husband, he's an introvert and I'm a total extrovert, and I said, okay, you're an introvert, how would the best approach be for this? And he said, telling them that you do all the talking and that they don't have to do any public speaking in front of their neighbors terrifies some people. He said, I know it doesn't terrify you, but it terrifies some people. And if you explain, all they have to do is put up some folding chairs, put on a pot of coffee, and you'll do all the work, then you might get more people interested. But some people are just so scared of how to
mm-hmm.
organize this. So I need to get the word out in a better way, with maybe a better vehicle, that they don't have to do anything but invite and open the door. So that's an ongoing issue. The other thing was, we still have those people working on about 100 homes that want to do this, and maybe if they advertise a little brush fire today up the hill here and get more people interested, it's not just earthquake, fire is important. This has been very popular. I mostly brought this for the two new people who aren't here tonight. This is the earthquake hazards by color coding by the city of West Lynn. Beige, light beige being the safest, and the highest level is the bright butterscotch yellow color. Sure, Lance knows this in his sleep. But when people see this, that gets them a little more interested in preparing. It's like, oh, I live in a very dangerous area. Maybe a landslide, maybe a fire, maybe an earthquake. But this map does get attention. So I take this to all meetings, and everybody takes the time to look at that. I have another map that shows the fault lines around the city, and I'm in between two of them. Three doors down, four doors down the opposite direction, I'm on two fault lines. They got my attention. They aren't San Andreas fault, but they're enough to get you concerned. And then Michael, board member, is not here tonight, had asked about how many people have had the training. Oh, let me just pull it down. So I counted, it's 498 people, families, I'm sorry, 498 families have had the training on Napa Neighborhood. That's a drop in the bucket for our 26,500 or so.
What was it now? What was the number?
498.
Okay, thank you.
I've had the training. And then, of course, people move and people die and new people come in. But in our neighborhood, I try to keep everybody up to date. And then I have a few captains of other neighborhoods, like Hidden Springs. There's a couple of real go-getters up there in Rosemont. And they try to take note of when people have moved away or whatever, and then they get them the information. So this is the last issue I have on the agenda is we've talked about trying to get this online. Well, I talked to Megan Furman up at the City GIS Engineering Department, and I said, we really need to get this online so that we can update it more easily instead of me with a felt tip marker and a ripped up map that, you know, is ridiculous. And she said, there's a liability issue, because if you make this public, there are people who probably do not want people to know that they've had preparedness training, because people might think, oh, they've got everything and I can, you know, take my gun in an emergency and go and rob them. I've heard sheriffs say that happens. It's not me making that up. So with the liability issue, the personal information issue, what she and I agreed upon, and we were going to try to get a meeting with Jules and City Council to talk about making this read only for only people in City Council, Mayor, City Council, and the board members of the voluntary boards, advisory boards, that they can look at it, and only like maybe for temporarily, you, Chris, and I can update it. Nobody else can update it. So we have three people in case one of us drops dead or something. I don't know what else to do, because we need to be able to update this on a computer system. They've got all the sophisticated equipment up there. There's no reason I should be doing this by hand. Megan said she'd be willing to input, and she asked how long it would take, and I told her how many houses, and she said, well, that won't take long. I can probably knock that out in, you know, a couple hours. So she's willing to do the work of inputting. She's willing to do the updating. I said maybe quarterly, maybe twice a year I can update you with all the new addresses and do that. She said, I have no problem doing that at all, and my boss wouldn't either. The thing is, I think we have to make it private to city members so that the public does not feel their information is being compromised.
What if it were divided regionally, say, cut it up by the neighborhood associations and not give specific, but maybe a percentage for that particular association versus the, you know, the, you know, there's 420 houses in this particular neighborhood, or a percentage of...
Yeah, Savannah Oaks is like at 4%, and Robinswood is at 8%.
Yeah, that's an interesting
idea. That would give at least some perspective without releasing detailed information.
That's a good idea, and I'm sure Megan would be willing to do that.
That's just a thought.
I just wanted to run it by everybody here. I'm roasting, so I'm going to close this door. I just wanted to run it by you guys.
Oh, it was just my ears. I haven't been able to hear all day.
I'm willing to keep, you know, I have been keeping track, and so I'm willing to keep on doing it. I just don't want somebody to suddenly sue us and say, you shouldn't have put my house number on there. That's all we have is house numbers.
No, so. That might be, I don't know how that would appear on the map. I don't know if that might give you more data than just the isolated pockets.
Well, right now it is house numbers.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Does anybody have an opinion on this?
Well, and you'll still need that for calculating your percentages, but as far as what could be for public consumption, that report out to the neighborhood associations to create some, maybe, incentive.
That's a good idea.
And their percentages up. It sounds like a good compromise.
Give the percentage to the neighborhood association presidents, and then if somebody wants to know, you can just say contact your neighborhood association president. They have the data of percentages. I mean, we don't need to flood the whole city with this piece
no,
of data that nobody cares about.
The other thing is, how do we get the word out that, you know, we're a bedroom community.
Yeah.
You know, I know, at least locally, I will go to, you know, the grocery store. I don't go too many other places in town. So it's more figuring out where we're going to get the biggest bang for a buck if we can get some visibility somewhere regarding the most current status or maybe some updated information, maybe capitalizing on you know, the latest disaster that's in the news. Just a thought. Chris?
I have thought about that, too. We're past the season, but I thought, you know, getting together with the Girl Scouts next time cookie time comes around.
Actually, I
and tabling with them into a bigger preparedness, we could help them sell cookies and get more word out.
I actually thought
the be prepared thing.
I'd be happy to sit at a card table with you know, my official little lanyard that says City of Westland Volunteer, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't look like some flake off the street.
Yeah, yeah.
And just have a little stand up piece of information laminated that looks slightly official that says, have you prepared for disasters?
Yeah.
The Girl Scouts are prepared, are you, or something, and then get permission. I'd go to the big grocery stores around here, you know, sit in front of Market of Choice, sit in front of a library. Not in 90-degree weather, but I'm willing to do it.
Yeah, but I think that ties in.
Yeah.
So would I.
I like the idea. I thought of that table, but I didn't think about tying with the Girl Scouts, and that's kind of cool if they wouldn't mind.
During that season.
I don't know if there'd be any prohibition against it. It might even be something that is a project that they might be involved in as far as community involvement update for you know, disaster preparedness in terms of
I could talk to
merit badge or whatever it is. I'm too far out of it these days.
I could talk to the regional Girl Scout leader and the manager of Market of Choice both and see if they have an issue with it, because we need to get the visibility, and you know, I have no problem talking to strangers if they walk by.
Mm-hmm. It's more or less identifying where the residents patronize or go somewhere in there. Yeah, everyone talks, well, we could put it at the library. I don't remember the last time I was in the library.
Oh, I go all the time.
Yeah, well.
Market Choice, Safeway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I think.
The big grocery store market.
I think one of the hurdles could be the Girl Scouts, because what they probably don't want is a bunch of organizations, you know, latching onto them, right? Because you never see anybody sit next to the Girl Scouts, ever. Think about that. You're going up there, and there's a bunch of great causes.
And I don't know if there's they have a program.
If they have a rule, like,
I tell you what, telling people about the shelf life of a Girl Scout cookie, I would want that in my kit. I have found boxes in the back of my cupboard that they still tasted good. Those shortbreads, man, are good.
Despite the mold.
No disrespect.
No mold. They were crispy.
Any other?
That's it. That's
okay.
I think we'd still.
I did talk to Karen McCoy with the Teen Driver Safety Street Survival Program, and just affirmed our people did make it there. The two. The plus we've got for this next class coming up is that it'll be in October instead of September, and so we have a little bit of lead time once school picks up to get some interest in it, and I don't know what we can do to generate more in that as well, other than re-emphasizing what the latest social media that's attracting the teens.
Do you plan to do the online application again? I think that generated some.
We didn't get that much difference with that. But we only had, you know, couple of weeks of window time to work with, so we'll see what we can do.
But the intent is still to go online again?
I think so. I think that's going to make it the easiest for anyone to apply. We just need to get the word out when the time comes, and maybe with a couple extra weeks, with school starting at the end of August. Dang. Are they making that shorter?
I wish there was something mandatory along. I mean, gosh, I've twice in the last month I've had teenage girls almost hit me. They were texting.
Yeah.
One of them almost had a head on. It was just really. They know it's against the law. They know it's dangerous, but I don't know why they think they're invincible and why they want to take other people down. But I almost wish the teen driving safety was mandatory in the schools, and they were somehow found the funding for every kid had to get it before they got their diploma. It's insane. Kids are driving like nuts.
Well, I don't know if this program's the answer for all of that, but anything that can open their eyes a little bit to it, and it doesn't help when the adults are doing the same thing, and
exactly.
See that as the example.
Yeah, and their parents don't see them doing it, and they would deny it. 10 ways to Sunday if your parents asked if you texted and drive.
So, anyway, that brings us to what might be classified as new business, and we've had some discussions over the last year or so that have overlapped with areas of public works and transportation as to who do we turn to for issues as far as the width of some of the roadways with emergency vehicles, and the inquiry to the Transportation Board, our head of public works said he thought that it might be best if he came and shared that information with us. So, Mr. Calvert, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And what questions do you guys have for him that we've had brought up that you'd like to get some clarification on? And then perhaps he can delve into some other aspects from there.
I think one of the questions, one of the concerns we've had, because we never know whose door a concerned citizen is knocking on first. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, we don't want ours to be the wrong door. There should be a no wrong door, mm-hmm. perhaps. But we don't always know that we're getting out of our wheelhouse a bit. We don't really have clear parameters.
Well, we don't know what the parameters are of other units.
Knowing
within
what
city.
The other, to what degree is the transportation advisory looking at in terms of maybe the same pedestrian safety things that seem to come to us. We get a lot of pedestrian safety and then the emergency vehicle, in addition to enforcement, of course, which then they're going to come here for the speeders so anyway. You could kind of maybe help us figure out.
One of the constant issues that keeps coming up is we'll get a complaint from somebody in a particular neighborhood. They're on a small street that the housing development was created. There's a certain parameter that was limited as far as street parking to allow emergency vehicles to get through. It isn't being followed. And if there's parking on both sides of the street, then it's not wide enough for the fire engine to get through. They bring a complaint to us. That street was supposed to be this far along, this wide. There should have been access. TVFNR is saying, well, we try and work around it, bringing in the trucks. Where is the city's role on that, or Public Works' role on making sure that the parameters were properly followed in the first place, so that we at least know where to send these people, or tell these people to maybe get some explanation, maybe not a resolution.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing is, at least what I have seen, and maybe I'll back it up a step even, and just talk about general roles and responsibilities. The definition of the advisory boards is really in their title. All advisory boards are advisors to the city council. That's their role. They're really not intended to be volunteer organizations or mm-hmm. special project organizations or anything like that. They're really intended to be citizen sounding boards to the council on issues that maybe the council wants active citizen engagement on, or sort of like, hey, we heard from this you know, supercharged citizen? Is this the, you know, sort of, we're looking to you as the advisory board to say, is this correct, or is this something that maybe this person's just sort of out there on, right? And yep. So, and then come back to us. At least that's what I think the original intent of the advisory mm-hmm. boards was. And then you have neighborhood associations, which is really about citizen engagement and, you know, sort of, again, sort of definitions a little bit in the title, but sort of broad, you know, they're more about, I think, bringing the community together maybe and having these opportunities for people to meet their neighbors and get to know each other. And they have a role in land use applications. So everybody that's a private developer has to go to the neighborhood association and get them educated and hopefully collaborate on a better development. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, sometimes it's them versus us, you know, right from the get-go, and that's really not what that was intended for. It's really to try and bring people together, not, you know, create division. And so a lot of it, I think, starts with the council. And I know, like, I'm an advisor to both the Utility Advisory Board and the Transportation Advisory Board. I'll tell you right now, the citizen has more advisory board members and NA members, not general citizens, just active president, vice president, and members like you guys, then we have staff. So that tells you that for a town of 26,000 people, there's a lot of advisory boards and groups to the city council and people feeding information. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way because not everybody participates. I mean, I always say, you know, it's not really a democracy, it's a republic. You elect people to work on your behalf. You don't elect people and then get to decide everything individually. You know, like, so you really should be paying attention to who you elect, not so much, you know, trying to disrupt or champion something in process. So it's a little bit of government education 101. And what we've done, at least what I've seen done in some other advisory boards, is they, UAB, you'll see on the, if you look at the UAB agenda and the TAB agenda, you'll see that they've created mission statements on what they feel their role is in relationship to the city council. Their role is to advise on these specific topics to the council, you know, and they've actually, in some cases, like the UAB's dropped down to, because there's not any major issue right now in the utility world, so of the city, so they've dropped down to meeting every other month. The TAB was meeting every other month, and now they're meeting every month because of the GO bond projects and the big transportation projects that we're working on, and so they're giving us more feedback on those big capital projects. So. Every advisory board is open to the public, and so every advisory board meeting is posted with an agenda, and so the public's always welcome, you know, and certainly encouraged to attend in every TAB meeting. But the problem with so many advisory boards, and if they don't all have mission statements and clear definitions of roles and responsibilities, and there's not great guidance from the council and goal setting for each advisory board to give advice back to council, then people tend to wander. You know, like everybody's not rowing in the same direction at that point. And it just feels like you're, like I see some groups paddle really, really hard and then wonder why they didn't get anywhere because they're going around in a circle. You know, and so it's like, what are you trying to accomplish? And sometimes it takes a step back, you know, to say, what is our role and what are we here to do and what are we trying to accomplish? And know that because we have so many advisory boards for such a small community, that plus the NAs, that a lot of people will shop for answers. They'll call me, then they'll call him, then they'll call him, and then they'll call somebody else, and then they'll call you guys.
because they're looking for the answer that fits their decision, you know, or what they feel is right, which, God bless them for shopping around, but, you know, it's sort of at the same time, you know, how do we channel people to the right place so that they get the most efficient use of their time and the most efficient use of our time? Because, you know, people want to be out enjoying the day. You know, it's Oregon. Like, I love being outside. Like, you know, don't want to sit in meetings every night of the week. You know, and so it's sort of like, or if I'm volunteering, I'm, you know, actively volunteering at the church or my hospital, or my wife works at the county, and my, or, I mean, don't really volunteer with Doug because he just harasses me at the library, but, you know, it's like there's ways to volunteer and use your time if you're wanting to volunteer. So, you know, it's sort of like, how do you do that, and what makes sense? And sometimes I think it's an education point of the group, and that's, I think I mentioned in the email, for this group to sort of sit there and think about, well, what's our mission? And is our name even correct for what we're doing today? You know, like, transportation's pretty broad. Like, I've seen some collapse everything down and just say, well, we're getting rid of all of these advisory boards and we're collapsing them down to a utility, or maybe a public works board, or you know, staff or departmental assignment boards, sort of like where it's aligned with maybe the police advisory board and the public works advisory board. Even then, there's overlap, right? You know, like, when do I go? I got a parking problem. Do I go to the public works department or do I go to the police department? And is it signed correctly? Is there a violation? Is it not? And when you get new people moving in, I saw that with Satter Street, which is probably the width question you got, who are coming from out of state, aren't really familiar with Oregon law, you know, and sometimes when they're like, well, they were parking, blocking the street. And I was like, well, did you, let me hand you the book that every 16-year-old gets when they get their driver's license and show you the state statute that says you can't block the street, regardless of whether it's posted or not. So then you get into those kinds of issues with enforcement. And so, you know, and what's enforceable. And so that gets into their job. So it's just like variations and education and getting people acclimated to what makes sense. I mean, we saw that same topic come up with the Plan Commission, and they were struggling with answers. And then it gets to the point where even staff starts to get confused because they're hearing so many different things from different people, and then I'm like, well, time out, what are we trying to accomplish? And it is interesting, like, street widths is such a great classic discussion because I think the Plan Commission and the Transportation Advisory Board and probably this group, City Council themselves, could spend hours on the topic and not satisfy everybody because you have some groups that want to live on a 16 or 12 foot wide little cart path kind of street and be very quaint and rural feeling and difficult for the fire department, but, you know, maybe they put in sprinklers or something to help, you know, whatever, you know, and then you've got other people that want, you know, a 40 foot wide street and don't think that's wide enough, you know, and then turn around and complain about speeding on the same street, you know, because, you know, there's this big expanse of pavement, you know, and then you get into the cost of maintenance of that, right? For the public works side, the utility advisory board is really about rates and rate setting. The transportation advisory board has a little bit of that same sort of role when it comes to the street fee, and so, you know, there becomes the discussion of, well, if the guy, you know, should, as fees start to climb and utility bill gets higher, the question becomes, well, should the guy that's the resident that's living on the 30-some foot wide street pay more on their street fee than the guy that's living on the 20-some foot wide street? Because there's a lot less maintenance, third less, you know, or whatever, depending on street widths as you go down. So you ask for more, you got to pay for more. You know, you ask for less, you pay for less. And so it's, it gets into all these different levels of question and answer and trying to sort of facilitate people to where they really need to go. And so I would say for this group, it's sort of, I would certainly recommend any advisory board creating what they feel is a mission statement and forwarding that to council for their review and approval. Because you got to know which direction you're rowing, right? And then the other thing is, you know, being educated a little bit on what all the different advisory boards are, and hopefully your staff liaisons, you know, up to speed on that a little bit, but, and then directing people to the right place. Because, like, even when people come in to Transportation Advisory Board and say, is kids speeding down my street, can you guys do something? And they'll be like, nope, we're the advisory board to the council. We're not the enforcement, and we don't set policy. We're an advisory group of your neighbors. We can certainly help advocate for you and point you in the right direction. And here's the form for the Traffic Safety Committee, which is made up of staff of all the different agencies that have a say in Westland and set policy and follow policy in Westland. And so in that group is the police department, the fire department, or the fire district, the school district comes to those meetings, and public works, of course, with their engineering group comes to that, those meetings. And we try and help educate and facilitate people in those meetings. You know, they don't usually get what they want. You know, usually they come in and they're like, I need a speed hump in front of my house because the neighbor kid keeps speeding. And we're like, and we're like, well, first off, we need to put you to the right people that can give you the right educational information. And then they can look at it. They can do the speed study and figure out, is there an issue, or is it just a one-off kind of situation? And if it is, then PD gets involved on the enforcement end of things and goes and talks to the neighbor or whatever. But if there is a serious problem with, you know, the neighborhood, then engineering gets involved and we start looking at, okay, what is it that we can do to help without hurting? Because sometimes the solution is the problem. And we've seen that too for things like response time and those kinds of issues where we don't want to create a problem when we're solving a problem.
I find that a lot of times, if it was an easy fix, it would have been fixed by the time they got to the second level, right? So,
particularly in Westland, yeah, where we're a very established community.
And there's a lot of moving parts to something as simple as speeders down, Appaloosa Way, or something like that, where it's like the people who are coming, they want a lot of things, right? They want more enforcement, right? But then they also want ways to slow people down, mm-hmm, right? So that's when they come up with these, I want a speed bump, I want to lower my speed limits, I want this. And all of those answers, or the people that touch those answers, are in a lot of different places.
Right.
Like, I don't decide who puts in a speed bump, right, or where to put them. All I do is we do enforcement. That's what the police department's role is in that, and education, with warnings.
That's what's so awesome about the Traffic Safety Committee, because it brings together staff from all these different agencies, and we work collaboratively so that you don't have to go to every different place to try and create the answer. And I think that's what makes Westland great, because we do have that interagency communication.
The Hidden Springs guy, that came to the Traffic Safety Committee, didn't it?
I think so.
One of the council members routed it over there as well.
Those are examples.
But what I'm thinking now is, I'm already beginning to think protocol, mm-hmm, and again, beginning to draft. So with the existence of a Traffic Safety Committee, whoever comes to us with these issues, it wouldn't be a put-off. That's a much more appropriate place to direct those particular concerns.
Because all those partners are already at the
table. I think of it two ways.
Right.
This is a polite, appropriate place to send, and then...
just like if somebody
and
has...
And then we begin to narrow our parameters to...
Well, we have a mission statement, I mm-hmm. believe, because when I joined,
it's on the webpage. Yeah, I just looked.
My concern is exactly that the gentleman that very justifiably had a compression break thing. My friend and her husband just moved off of Cottonwood Court, and they were at the far end, and they said, "Wow, was that noisy? And wow, were there some near misses?" And you know, I'm sure you're doing all you can, but you can't put an officer right at that corner every day.
For 2 months, and I have not seen that.
Well, she lived there 30 years, and she said it happened a lot. Yeah. But my concern was, and while Tom writes some of the best business letters I've ever seen, and I was in the corporate world, excellent letters. Mm-hmm. The problem is, he wrote a nice response. I saw it, and of course, my feeling is a citizen has a really urgent question. You try to get back to them, even if you don't have an answer, so they're heard. Mm-hmm. So Tom did that. And then the next thing you know, we have the city manager responding and the chief of police responding, all to the same man, and it makes us look disorganized.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because that person is shopping. When you send an email to the mayor, you send one to the city manager, right? You are shopping for your answer. Oh, and so all of those people are going to respond to you, right? Because that's what a good...
So they said, I thought maybe this was the one inquiry that ended
everybody
up with a million responses.
No.
If they're shocked, okay.
No,
go ahead.
If you looked at the original email and saw all the email addresses to it, it went to the Public Safety Board, I don't know if it went to the city council or to the chief, there were several on there as well. And usually when we get something like that, I usually will sit on it a couple of days and see if any of the other addressees respond. And then at some point, it's like, okay, as our particular role, it's not something we're going to do anything with. What's this person want to hear that we're listening, but we can't do anything for it, or who they can potentially talk to, which is why, you know, in my response, I copied the captain and the chief on that. They in turn put it on their traffic board, as the email from the chief said.
Right.
So Mr. Polly is now getting, you know, the feedback that, well, I did talk to them, and they are taking some steps to at least put me in touch with the right people. And that's, I think, the best option we as a board, or in response to inquiries like that, can do is that, yeah, there's a lot of things we can't do, but maybe we can direct them to the right contact, at least put that process in, even if, you know, you can't give them a complete resolution. It also kisses it off to somebody else.
Sort of becomes a issue of what I call 411. You know, like if you go to ODOT, they have a thing called Ask ODOT. So even if you're talking, if there's a guy on the street from ODOT and you're like, hey, I got a problem over here, he's going to say, call Ask ODOT. Mm-hmm. It's their 411 informational system. We have something like that. It's called YourGov. Unfortunately, it doesn't work very well. It's sort of dated. It's on our own servers. It crashes, and we have to reboot it. And so we're actually in the process of sort of shopping ourselves for a new 411 system that would better respond to citizen requests and route people to the right place. And then questions about should there be, I think that gets to a bigger question of should there be a one call type number for the city. You know, it used to be that they'd publish like every single city employee's name and phone number, and now we've like, and it's all in an effort to try and help, right? Because people are like, well, we want to try and help, but at the same time, it's like you say, it becomes disorganized, it sort of becomes chaotic. Is somebody responding? Is somebody not responding? You know, what's happening?
Makes us look like the left hand doesn't know the right hand's good.
Yeah, and so I think we've shrunk that down to maybe just like a lot of departments have just gone down to, I know Public Works and Police have gone down to just supervisors and the chiefs and the main one call number and dispatch. And so, so we're trying to like mold and redo and so it gets into like, again, I think a great advisory board role to council is to sit there and say, is our system working, and those kinds of things to handle these individual requests, because like even like emergency management, right? Like it hits the fan, they're calling everybody looking for immediate response, right? How do you get in the queue and where's the right place to go? So that you make sure you're, you know, that we as your staff are getting and responding to the most critical needs first, right? And not just the loudest need first. Mm-hmm. Or the person that's got everybody's contact information first. So, it's like, how do you do that? So that becomes, I think, more the role of the advisory boards and the policy setters versus the doing, which is sort of like, okay, doing is staff and or volunteers. Because, like, even the library has volunteers that help, shelf books and stuff. If I could get volunteers, to fill potholes, I would probably say volunteer because I can certainly put laborers to work. It just becomes an issue of insurance and all those kinds of things with volunteerism. I don't know if there's much of a role in volunteering for police department other than maybe traffic enforcement, but, I mean, traffic direction or safety or helping out at special events or something like that, which, we could do. But, those kinds of things, it's like, how do we stay efficient? How do we move the boat in the direction that we all want it to go as efficiently as possible? Knowing, because we have such limited funding. Right? I mean, that's a real issue. Like, even your discussion with Megan, or when she says, my boss says it's okay, she's like, she's talking to me. And I'm like, well, remember, Megan, your position is 100% paid for through utility fees. And so it's only the utility fees that really are funding your position. So it's nice that we can do these other things in collaboration with the police department and planning and in those other areas, but people want to know that what their utility bill for is paying for utilities. And if we need a fee or we need something for these other general services, then we need to be charging that way, right?
Actually, I pay her in cash.
Right. And not just pocket, not just rolling where the revenue is and then spending where we want to spend.
You cut her a 1099 at the end of the year.
People get really upset if they find out that their, street fee that's made there to fill potholes or fix roads and handicap ramps or whatever is being used to, do emergency management or something like that. So it's like, where is that appropriate space? And the nice thing is we've got TBF&R here, and they're flush with cash.
Of course.
And so they could be doing all this emergency management for us.
Well, if you do update...
I say it, Jess, because I know he's always giving me the evil eye.
If you do update the 411 system, please let me know how you let citizens know, and I can use the same idea for Map Your Neighborhood, because if you can get citizens to know that there's something they can call and not have to look at 25 phone numbers.
Right.
That would be great. It's just like, how do you get the attention of a bedroom community that maybe isn't all on social media? Mm-hmm. It's challenging.
It's all, and I found it, I went to the thing, it's all communication is very much, and we could have, our communications person come here, but communication is very much age-related, a hard, terrible thing to say, but it is. I mean, it's very much like generational and what people trust and use. I mean, my kid, I got two kids in high school, and they quite honestly, they have no use for a television set at all. they use this continuously.
They can stream.
And they don't even know what NBC is. Literally.
How can you see a movie on a screen that big?
Right? Which is I sit at home and they're like watching Netflix and she's on the couch looking like this and the giant 55-inch TV is right there and it can stream Netflix also and this is what she's using.
I know they do, I just can't imagine
it. And it's so different from other people in other generations. Like my parents are tried and true newspaper people, and they get the newspaper, and they look at it every day, and that's where they get their news and information.
And a landline.
And they have a landline, and it's just different. People are just different, and that's, I think, what I tell people it makes so hard to communicate today is
too many modes.
Yeah, there's just so many modes. I mean, and everybody's using their own mode. I mean, even on public projects, it's very difficult because, I always tell people it was way easier back in the 60s and 70s when you had three television stations and one newspaper. and the internet didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number one, people didn't need it that day, unless it was in the newspaper or on TV. And
you didn't know about it for a week anyway.
Didn't know about it.
And they didn't know. And life was okay, you know. And so it's sort of like the differences of today versus yesterday. And so it's just, it's one of those things. And so I always tell people, you know, like, we all want to be responsive. We all want to be helpful. We all want to be on point for anybody that comes to us asking help. But we also need to know our role and our lane and where we go and where we don't. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, can you waive this fee or can you do this or can you do that? And I'm like, nope. It's like, my role is staff. My role is this. If you want that done, then you got to go to the city manager and or most likely the city council and you know where the right place is. And that's hard. I mean, that's really hard for elected officials who want to be Johnny on the spot, responsive to everybody. But they're really policymakers, right? You know, it's like, well, you know, not everything can be subjective. You got to set objective policy and then let all these other people do, you know, and that's hard.
Well, you guys are all busy, too.
Right?
We have a 10 house, the Varitz development, a street away from us going on 10 houses,
mm-hmm.
and all the issues with that and all the people that are okay with it, we know, you know. Things happen. You have a population growing, and you've got some land that can be developed. It's going to happen whether you like it or not, and you may as well just learn to find the best way to do it. But people, I mean, I'm sure you've had phone calls where people freak out in development situations. Well, I can't see so-and-so anymore, and they did this, and they did this, and they did that. And it's like, have you gone on site? Have you looked at all the documents relating to that project? No. Well, why don't you? Because all your answers are there, and then you might not be so worked up about it. I've had neighbors that just go completely off the handle about this subject, and others that are, I know what's going on. Why don't you educate yourself?
Well, I think it's like, just like you said with the emergency management, every person's unique, and some people get very involved very early, and then some people wait until the bulldozer's in their backyard, and then they're sort of out there panicking, you know, and so we try and be responsive to all those citizens in different ways, whether it's publishing stuff about stuff online, land use development, public hearings and process, all the way to, I don't know if that's the one off Old River or not, but it's... you know, sending the inspector out and giving them the name, number, and card and talking to them face-to-face about the project and what's going on. You know, those kinds of issues. We had a guy do sort of the broadcast email to everybody about trucks from the Lake Oswego project coming down Old River.
The water project.
And cutting up to... I can't remember the name of the side street that goes up.
Glenmore?
It's adjacent to the one that goes between Walmart, between McDonald's and Starbucks down.
Walling Way.
Yeah, Walling.
Yeah.
And we come to find out, no, it wasn't the LO people at all, so you can't blame that other city, you know, and how terrible they are. It was really from the subdivision. And it was really because they were working next to the school that day on the corner at Old River, and the trucks were trying to get around the work zone where they had flaggers that day. And so it's just sort of like, it's really not that bad here in West Lynn, but, you know, people, you know, really, you know, get passionate about it very quickly sometimes, and we try and be responsive, but also try and be the calm voice sometimes. And the police, I think, do a great job of that in their job. So it's just, I think, knowing what it is your role is and what your lane is, and then thinking about, you know, those big sort of, sometimes the step back away from the tree and bigger forest picture of, you know, are we doing what we're intended to do? Do we need to meet as often as we meet? You know, is, you know... Sometimes, like I found too with these advisory boards, with the UAB is a great intro tool to new volunteers because they don't have the time to commit to
something like the Plan Commission, where they're meeting, you know, sometimes at great length, but they want to participate and they want to be active and knowledgeable. And so, a meeting every other month is sometimes good. And then you fill in if you need an extra meeting, you know, that extra month, then you schedule a special meeting. There's nothing wrong with that. So it's sort of just like where you're at and what's happening and how to be the most responsive to the city council, who's ultimately your boss, right? Or at least in this case, who you're reporting to. Now, I wouldn't say your boss, but who you're volunteering for. And every council's different. I mean, the city council may give you something different than I told you.
City council liaison.
Right.
Only
have one appearance.
Yeah, they change.
So. No, there have been some meeting fluctuations, and I think they've had some
emergency meetings come up. Very often, and so, you know, having a meeting on a Monday is very difficult. I have had to come to a couple of Main Street meetings for the Main Street group, and they meet oftentimes on Monday evenings, and so I'm like trying to like duplicate myself and be at a council meeting at the same time at the Main Street meeting, and then trying to, you know, cover both, and so it is a challenge when there's lots and lots of meetings.
Monday meetings, especially.
Well, as long as the citizens that come to any of us advisory boards, you know, they're angry, if we can just let them know that we hear them and we're going to point them in the right direction, if somebody can give an answer, I think that's the main thing, is because the people who are working, you know, 60-hour weeks often aren't the ones who are calling with an issue. They're often retired. I'm retired. You have more time. And they're angry, and then they maybe let it build up to the point of, like, you know, a little too angry, and they want an answer.
Yeah.
And as long as we can say, we hear you, we respect the fact that you have an issue, and we're getting you in touch with the right people, I think that's the first step to diffusing it. And sometimes transportation and public safety do overlap. It's just the nature of it, I guess.
Like this Main Street transportation project we're working on, I tried to, like, pin the council down a little bit on who I'm supposed to, you know, get advice from, because there's the Main Street group, there's the two neighborhood associations that overlap with this area, there's the Transportation Advisory Board, there's the Economic Development Committee, there's the Historic Review Board, and so each group has their own sort of sense of
mission
and interest, so then I go back to the council and say, look, I'm just going to come to you because
you're always one.
I've gone out and we've outreached to all these groups, but I can't continue to outreach to every group because it's hard to manage that time effectively, and remember, you're paying us, so I want to be very, I'm a citizen too. I want to be very cost conscious, on how to best use our limited resources. So how do we do that? This becomes a question.
So one more time, the Traffic Safety Committee then meets how often?
There's on the city website, you can sign up. They typically will meet every other month unless there's a lot on their agenda. And they set those times based on the number of requests they get. They get requests on everything from code enforcement issues to school issues to speed hump issues to stop sign issues to mailbox issues. I mean, you name it. If it's something having to do with the municipal code or traffic issue of really any sort, they're the group. And the TAB likes that too, because the Transportation Advisory Board really sees their role as advisory to the council. And so they're not there to replace staff, they're to be educated on every single state statute regarding this particular issue. That's for staff. They feel that's a staff job. They're not the city's attorneys, and so they really see themselves as more of a sounding board to the council on citizen issues. So are we responsive? Are we doing what we need to do? Should we invest more in one area or another, becomes the question of the TAB, is like, how do we most cost effectively use the resources that we have available to ourselves. And so I think they're constantly sort of thinking that way. And they have broader issues too, like not just traffic, but transit, and it would fall under the Transportation Advisory Board. And it's all sort of spelled out. And they post their mission statement on every agenda at the top, so that hopefully when people read it, they can, hey, this is what we do right here. And so, you know, it's a way for them to sort of facilitate people, but also point them hopefully in the right direction, and point themselves and new members in the right direction, because they're all constant, you know, there's turnover on advisory boards, and it's like, how do we educate new advisory board members, and what's the role? And so that's all part of it too, I think.
I have another quick question for you. How do you differentiate between when you have Highway 43, which is state run by ODOT, and then you've got things like the crosswalks and the lights that go over it that are part of the city, right?
Mm-hmm. Anything within the state right of way is state controlled. So yeah, I'd love to. I actually, you know, with all the, I see next door posts and stuff, and all the time, I'd love to put up a sign at the either end of Highway 43 in West Lansing. Here's the contact information. Yeah. Here's Ask ODOT's email and phone number. If you have a problem on 43, yeah,
please,
it's not the city.
You know, how far does that variance go? But like, I was the example I was thinking is where you where Walmart and Old Car Wash are, where Hidden Springs comes down to 43. In the wintertime, you can't see pedestrians wearing black that get off a bus and cross the street. And I was thinking, who's responsible for those street lights? There's one, and it's so inadequate. And I've seen people come down and almost hit pedestrians because they're not paying attention to who's in the crosswalk because there's no light. And I thought, is that ODOT or is that the city?
Yeah, so if it's all by right-of-way, and that can be a little confusing, which is why we have the maps. But in general, anything along Highway 43, including the intersections, is ODOT controlled. Basically past, if there's a sidewalk, anything past the sidewalk would be the city. If there's a ditch or something like that, then anything past the ditch would basically be the city, or the private property adjacent. So it just, it's where that dividing line is. Gets goofy when you're around interchanges. Technically, ODOT right-of-way includes Salamo Road, but there's an agreement between the city and the state that says that the city maintains Salamo and the state maintains the state I-205 corridor and 10th Street. So it just
like those exceptions to
the rules, yeah,
of English. You know,
well,
I before E, except
yeah,
after C.
So I guess the no exception is if it's ODOT property, and I say that in terms of ODOT maintained right of way that's mapped and documented, then it's ODOT. If it's City of West Lynn mapped and documented right of way, then it's the City of West Lynn. The problem is you get into shades of gray, like you said, when you get onto these borders that sometimes get really goofy with the historical nature of these areas. If you really think about, you know, like people don't even realize that, you know, years ago, ODOT ran state parks. There was no state parks agency. It was all ODOT. And so Mary S. Young, if you look at the historical original records of Mary S. Young Park, they are the property of ODOT, and Mary S. Young is the property of ODOT. And so they never dedicated right-of-way adjacent to Mary S. Young Park because it was all owned by ODOT. Well, then they created the new state agency and they separated it out, and then the head-scratching started of, wait, where does the state park begin and where does the highway begin? And then you add another level of complexity to it of what can and can't happen in state parks or in other facilities, and it becomes really, you know, then basically attorneys get involved, and we all know how useful they are. So, but that's just sort of like the history, right, of the area, and so you got to work through that.
I'd say probably the biggest exceptions to that is as things get built out, sometimes there are intergovernmental agreements between agencies. Like when we start working on Highway 43 and 10th Street here, what will happen is ODOT will try and give us as much of the road as possible and the right-of-way as possible, and we will start maintaining some things in those areas of select improvements. But they're still ODOTs. So everything would still go to ask ODOT as far as the citizen's concerned. And then ODOT would come back to the city and say, hey, this is yours to deal with, or this is ours to deal with. So it's still a clean line for, you know, for the public. You can still, anything that's close to Highway 43, I say ask ODOT. And then if it's all not in their right-of-way, they'll let the person know, contact the city, and here's the phone number, and here's the contact information. And sometimes they'll even send it to me.
So you're getting tired of people calling about repaving 43,
aren't you? Yeah, and fixing potholes on 43. I'm like, sorry, I actually can't even go out there and do it because then that incurs liability on the city. Okay. And then so there's this whole like legal framework of what we can and cannot do.
You may have been joking about it, but can you legally put a sign at each end of Westland of 43
no.
saying
no? Legally, I can't. Without ODOT's permission.
Even if it just says this is owned and maintained by ODOT, you don't even have to put a phone number.
Yeah.
So many people call about that. Our neighbors are going nuts over that.
We're getting to light threshold.
And Stefan's falling asleep.
Stefan, do we have any updates from TVFNR?
Just a couple quick ones. Well, actually, it was just on the fire out on I-205. Just had a quick brush fire there. Crews were on quickly and got it taken care of. That one was trailer, wheel came off, and caused some sparking. So luckily, that's nice that we were able to get a quick response on what we see on this. Also, just a note, I was out on, we had a multiple vehicle crash on Stafford Road that I've been aware of 2 days ago. So I was out on that scene. That was really unfortunate for the driver on it. But we have seen, I don't know what police has seen, but we've seen a lot of crashes in the last 2 weeks for multiple reasons. I know Washington County Sheriff put out something, they had like 6 DUIs in one weekend. So just a good time, and glad we're doing team driver safety, but generally adults and kids, good time to be extra cautious on the roads. Wanted to thank the Westland Kiwanis. They honored us at the Old Time Fair this weekend. Gave us some plaques that we're going to be putting up at the stations. Really nice touch that we appreciated. And then our liaison and one of the counselors, Counselor Walters, came and joined us at Station 59 here right across the street for a ride-along. Took her out on water rescue and got her some great exposure. We really appreciate that when our elected officials and those who make decisions that affect us better understand the job and the work that we perform. So that was great that she took the time to come join us for that. And then we have a new fire chief that I had explained. We did an official transfer of command since our last meeting. One thing I thought of note was our fire chief. We have a bullseye that we work by. And it starts with safety and performance, okay? That's our most important. It also includes customer service, and that's really important to our chief. But what he's added to that is inclusion. And that's become one thing that he's added as chief in his first couple days, as in whether it's internal or external to our community, inclusion is an important aspect of that. So that was a message he had shared that I wanted to pass on to you.
Very good.
I have a question for you from David Baker. For whoever happens to be listening, previous PSAB member, very involved in city things. He said since there was this grass fire right up here today, that kind of freaked him out, like a lot of people, that if you guys hadn't been so on top of it, that could have turned kind of disastrous going up the hill because of the landscaping around here, the topography, things going up a hill, dry grass obviously becomes a huge problem. He was just wondering if something could be done, like a 20-foot fire block with, you know, just filled with gravel, if nothing else, just the strip near the most vulnerable area where you could do a 20-foot fire block to prevent some of the possibility of the fires going up the hill. And I have no information about fire blocks. I know what they look like on TV, and what, I don't even know how to ask the question, but he just asked me to ask you if a fire block could be considered.
I think he's talking about fire break, which is just a break in the fuse.
Sorry.
It can be accomplished through mowing or through other stuff. We actually work with the city. Savannah Oaks would be an example, and then also Barrington Heights, of which a large fuel break was created in that area. Key areas and where it could run, we have worked to make sure that there are fuel breaks.
Okay.
And then also they pre-plan around those fuel breaks on how they can get access to protect homes and fight the fire at the same time.
Okay.
So some of those are in place. If there's a specific area that wants to take a look at, we could talk with them, and then it's usually working with the city, and it's usually their property, and then we can assess if there's actually a concern.
I'm sure you guys are already on top of it, but...
Any updates from the police department?
We hired a brand new sergeant from, we stole him from Oregon City Police Department. We have three recruits, and that brand new sergeant has started, and he's in uniform, he's on day shift, learning our, the Westland way of doing stuff. We have three recruits that are going to be graduating from the academy before our next meeting, so they graduate August 9th, so that'll be nice. They'll be out into the different shifts or part of the following Monday. We are going to be hiring, assuming he passes his psychological testing and his medical testing, we'll be hiring a lateral police officer probably on August 12th, that Monday. So we're excited about all those. And then we just had the Westland Old Time Fair. The city of Westland did, and we were down there. We had no major incidents to speak of. So it was a good time was had by all. I think it was a very warm event. And we look forward to doing it again next year.
Okay. Any last good of the order items to entertain?
One question as far as, when I hear about the psych evaluate or whatever. I mean, just the screening process, because now we've got another person now in Louisiana who, because of a Facebook post, is under, and I'm just like...
Is
under investigation of...
Somebody put something inappropriate up that identified them as a police officer.
Yes.
Reflects poorly on...
So, it's kind of like, I don't know how you can screen until that becomes available, but, I was just maybe curious again, just as far as, what does get asked as far as some kind of... seeing where their head is at as far as community service and... inclusion and that type of thing.
So we use, Westland uses Dr. David Corey. He's out of Lake Oswego, and he has a partner. His name is Casey Stewart. Dr. Corey is one of the leading police psychologists in the country. He goes all over, he teaches. His screening process is much more technical than I could ever hope to explain, but I know that because I used to run the personnel division in Portland, and we use the same guy. And everything that he does is evidence-based. So the questions that he asks, every candidate will take a battery of tests to measure different things to see where they're at. The tests all have to come back where the person's kind of in the bell curve, right in the middle. Now, is it a 100% predictor of poor behavior? Absolutely not, right? Some of that, so to get through the psychological screening, I'll tell you that most people pass their psychological screening who make it to that stage. And it's every time we have a failure, so we hire somebody who doesn't turn out to make good decisions, Dr. Corey will pull that person's file and go over it again and to see, what kind of predictors were there, and it helps to create, reinforce or create other things to look for. And most often, because we went through a lot of people in Portland, it wasn't a factor that he didn't know about questionable behavior. He just didn't give it enough weight, and so he's constantly refining his process. So it really is data driven. You're talking about Facebook posts. That's not something Dr. Corey does. That's something that our background investigator does. And we look through the Facebook histories as far back as we can go to all, not just Facebook, but all social media. Some of it, some people are smart and they don't have one or they delete it before they ever apply for us. But some of the content is still there forever because once it's on the web, it's there. And of course, future behavior is often predicted by past behavior. So people are making stupid posts. That's probably an indication that they're going to make stupid posts again. And we usually pass on those candidates.
One of the things with the psych evals in law enforcement and public safety in general is it's not so much looking for aberrant behavior, but there's also looking for challenges that they might have in the position. Are they going to be able to function in the field training officer program? Is there going to be a challenge there understanding or working in that particular assignment? I know of one particular individual that because of his affiliation with an agency from a long time before, he was given an opportunity to follow up with the psych on a particular incident. And one of the things the psych had brought out was that there might be a challenge on him in the learning process, that there might be some areas where he's not quite as sharp or as smooth in grasping things. And surprisingly, that panned out in his FTO program, that there were some deficiencies, but he was able to compensate for it. But those are the sort of things that they're looking at, not so much the unusual, psychotic, goofy type things. Where are they going to fit in with the mindset of the agency? And it might be they pass for one agency, but because of certain other parameters they're looking at another one, they may not fit in that particular environment. So
I can tell you, too, personal experience, law enforcement's very different in different parts of the country. So my brother's involved in law enforcement in Missouri and before that in Texas, and both states are quite different than here. Pay is vastly different, the caliber of employees and training programs and recruiting programs is vastly different. So it just, a lot of it depends on regional issues and just, you know, good old common sense. I mean, you know, like we tell people, you know, social media is what it is, just like email is what it is. And, you know, don't put anything on there that you're not comfortable talking to your parents about or seeing on television. And so, you know, those are sort of rules of thumb that help guide people and hopefully give them that Jiminy Cricket moment. You know, maybe I shouldn't shout this to the world.
But if it's part of the prevalent culture of someone's own familial community, sometimes there's a comfort in sharing certain
becomes very
senses and feelings.
I was in the entertainment industry for 20 years, and I do not go to social media account on purpose.
Right.
But I find this is helpful because that's how I see in the roles that I've assumed in boards such as this. I think we're very important not only as the sounding board to the public, but also by a better understanding, asking questions in a comfortable, safe, we can be then ambassadors for staff, too, that maybe will help keep some of the queries down and open up time for staff to do their work. Too.
Just because we're big doesn't mean we're not
there's a dual role. There's a dual role for these boards, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, we're just trying to help. I really appreciate you coming tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot, and that really helped me understand things better, because when people ask us questions, we are just advisory. We don't make decisions. We don't work for the city. But if we can offload you guys in any way, that's fantastic,
well,
because you need to do the bigger stuff.
There's an expectation, though, that boards have weight and that they've got the ear of, and that's...
Well, I think there's also, like I said, different places, different communities, different situations.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Westland is a great place. That's why I work here, why I live here, because, You know, it's very collaborative, and hopefully people feel comfortable coming to staff and, you know, and engaging with staff, and or if not, coming to these boards and having these, like you guys act as, just like you said, ambassadors to staff and city management and to police department or fire and elected officials. And so it's like what people feel comfortable with, right? And so it's nice that we can engage on all these different levels and hopefully direct them to the right place. Not just, you know, and terminology is so important. It's not like putting them off, right? It's like giving them the right place to go. Like, it's like, if you know, it's like, if I always use stupid analogies, my kids tell me all the time, but and I was like, we're in the mall. If I have a question about men's clothes, I don't want them to direct me to women's clothes. You know, yeah. That's not helpful. You know, so, you know, it's just like, I need, you know, just hopefully we get good guidance and get people where they need to be.
Yeah.
And are responsive. And sometimes it's policy. You know, it's like, hey, there's a reason this is this way, so.
And Westland is awesome. I have relatives, a few on the East Coast, and they say, you actually know your neighbors and do potlucks with them? And I said, yeah, I don't know my neighbors. I've been here 20 years. And it's like, wow, we do have a wonderful neighborhood.
Yeah. Our next meeting is August 26th. That's the weekend before Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend actually starts in August this year because the first is on a Monday. If there's some ideas that you want brought up or discussed for the next meeting, email me some thoughts or ideas. One other thing for consideration, at least according to what's still up on the webpage for us, it says that we don't meet in July and August. That was changed a few years ago, but it's still listed that way. And I don't know if we want to continue that, given that here we are in July, we've got three regular board members. Maybe, you know, knocking out one of them for next year might be a consideration.
Yeah. And like you said, have an emergency meeting, whoever said it, if you need to call.
If needed.
Yeah. Yeah, you can always call special meetings. So.
Okay.
Any other last comments?
You did say the 26th of August, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yep.
I'm assuming I put the right date in there.
That's a Monday. So.
Chris yes. pointed out I had another typo on here elsewhere. So.
Okay. Oh, good.
What can I say? If nothing else,
we
are adjourned since we never really officially started.
I nominate, oh, we don't even need to nominate without a quorum.